Thank you very much for coming and showing some interest in our topic of the false ego. Even though Mataji was introducing myself already, so I'm not exactly sure what she said. I did not understand. But maybe I can just add a few little things that I actually went through all the different ashrams. I understood that she was saying I was Brahmacharini in Australia. I was living in Australia getting some training. Then I was also married for 10 years. I think she didn't say that. She did? Okay. What? Yes. Oh, for the very first time? Oh, who is here for the very, very first time in this center? Wow, amazing. So how did you find out that there's something happening today here? Some friends. Okay. Yes, okay. Well, this seminar, well, when you come the first time, there's always so many things which kind of fly past your ears and you can't quite grasp it. This is the way it is, I guess. So, because I have to admit that seminar is more for people who are already a little bit more familiar with our philosophy and lifestyle. So I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to, you know, bring this whole seminar to the very beginner's level. This will not be possible. But you will get something. I'm sure you will. Maybe not everything, but you will understand something. So in any case, I was married for 10 years or so, and in that time, by Krishna's arrangement, we actually pioneered the first more organized temple in the former Soviet Union, actually, in Riga, in Latvia. This was in 1989 to 1999, we were there. This was very adventurous times. We had a very dynamic set up there. We had 75 brahmacharis, monks, celibate monks living in the temple, and about 30 ladies. So it was quite dynamic. So, and then my former husband, he decided to take a little break from Krishna consciousness. He remarried a non-devotee again and so on. So, and since then, I am basically living out of a suitcase for the last 20 years. Actually, just a few days ago, I came from India, from Mayapur. And I spend now 5 months per year in India and Bangladesh, and 7 months per year in all different countries in Europe, also Ukraine, Moldova, I go a lot, but also North America, Canada, so all different places. And I have two main topics I like to speak about, where I feel a strong urgency actually to speak about. This is first of all about the chanting of the holy name in japa as well as in kirtan. I am firmly convinced that we have to make more effort to actually get on deeper levels of understanding. Very easily we take this lightly and superficially, but then we will not really get the benefit from chanting the Maha Mantra. So I like to conduct holy name retreats, and this is always a very sweet and deep experience. And then the second topic is the topic of spiritual culture. And I have received all these inspirations and transformations and insights because for the last 20 years I spent a lot of time in Bangladesh every year. And Bangladesh is a very special place. It's East Bengal. It's where actually most of Mahaprabhu's associates come from, like even Lord Chaitanya's parents, Jagannath Mishra, Sachimata, they come from East Bengal, which is Bangladesh today. And also Advaita Acharya, the one there on the very left, he's also coming from Bangladesh. And Srivas Thakur, he's also coming from there. And so many others also. And because it is a Muslim country, that has preserved our Vaishnav culture. Because Muslims are not so fond of all the modern nonsense ideas, so to speak. And that kept Bangladesh very traditional, very cultured. It's quite amazing, actually. It's like a different planet. And when I visit there and travel there, I'm only with the locals. There's no Western devotees living there. So, it's like entering Chaitanya Charitamrita, really, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya when I'm there. And it is quite, it has transformed my personal spiritual practice and also my preaching. So much so that I have even established a little institute for spiritual culture. For those who are interested, after the lecture, you can take a little brochure like that. So, because we like to study our philosophy and learn it and learn or memorize our verses from the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. This is all very nice and good, but step number two is living it, practically applying our philosophy. And there, we are not quite there yet. That's quite a challenge, actually, to really live our philosophy. And when we live our philosophy, then actually the culture manifests in all different aspects of life. So, and I firmly believe that we do need some training in this, because even here, Ljubljana, we are heavily surrounded by materialistic propaganda and influences and culture. And this very deeply influences us, actually. We often think that we have our opinions and we make our decisions. But actually, we are a product of our surroundings, actually. We don't even realize. Yes. So culture is a very important thing, actually, which has a transformational impact on our consciousness. And yes, the more aspects of spiritual culture we accept in our life, the easier it is to actually spiritualize our consciousness and our existence. Yes. So in any case, the topic today, and not only today, for the next few days, so today we are introducing the topic, then tomorrow morning from 8 to 9 we will continue, and then again in the evening from 5 to 7, tomorrow evening we will do this in the classroom there in the other building, because here will be some kirtan going on. And then again Sunday morning and Monday evening. So we have a few sessions on this topic. And each time you come, you get some printed materials. So now we can give out lesson number one. Yes, we have this in English and also in Slovenian. For some people who speak quite well English, it might be easier to stay in one language, and rather get the English materials. Otherwise, you hear English and you read Slovenian and easily you get a little mixed up there. So all of you here, you understand well English? Yes? Good. Otherwise, there is also a translation going on for those who don't. So, yes, can we distribute the materials? Or you haven't prepared that yet? A little bit only. I thought you were doing this while I'm giving here the introduction. Yes. Maybe somebody can help her distribute so it goes a little faster. Somebody can get up and distribute the English materials. Here in the front, we still have people who don't have it. You have it on the phone? You took a photo or what? Okay, wow. But actually, it's good to have the paper because I'm not sure whether you thought of this, but I'm hoping that you have a pen and you take a few notes on the paper. Because one should never come to a seminar without pen and paper. Because how much can we remember? You know? Already tomorrow you will hardly even remember what we talked about. Unfortunately, it's like that. So good to take a few notes. So Madhuji, there's still some people who don't have the materials. That they have only one to share. Huh? Your brothers. Okay. So, can I ask you one more thing? Soumya Dattri Madhuji. Can you have the materials ready for people who come late? And then whenever some latecomers come, you please get up and give them a sheet. Huh? No more. No more. Oh, well, I'm sure they understand Slovenian. After all, we are in Slovenia. So whatever you have there, have it ready for people who come late. So, because it's often like that, people might be working, some people might only join us at 6 o'clock or something, so please sit there in the back, and whenever somebody comes in, you give them material. Good. So, yeah, so the full title of the seminar is The False Ego, Our Constant Companion and Troublemaker. That's really what the false ego is, our constant companion and troublemaker. Always gets us into trouble. We will hopefully, realize this in due course of this seminar. Actually, the main problem about the false ego is that it is so subtle that we can easily completely miss it. We don't even realize its existence. I once gave the same seminar in India, in Vrindavan, and after the seminar, one lady was sharing with me privately. She was practicing Krishna consciousness already 15, 20 years or something, and she was saying to me, "Oh, thank you for giving the seminar. I thought the false ego is just some theoretical, philosophical, technical thing. I never even realized that I have this." That's what she was saying. Yes. Because it is so subtle, we can easily miss it. And my realization, the reason why I put the seminar together, because in due course of preaching and giving other seminars, I realized that very easily we can completely miss the whole target of Krishna consciousness and do the opposite of what we should be really doing. Instead of giving up and dissolving the ego, we feed it and we blow it up and we increase it. This easily goes on. It's happening. So much. Yes. We can miss the whole target completely if we are not mindful and introspective and we observe ourselves and yes. And then I started thinking, my God, this topic of false ego is such an important topic. It deserves a separate seminar. And also in regards to chanting the holy name, I realized also, because I was sharing that I like to conduct holy name retreats, but even that has only little use if not parallel we work on giving up the false ego. Because if we don't do that, what happens is we chant, we try and chant and concentrate and, but then after the chanting, we just fall back into our ego patterns of behaviors. And we can compare that kind of chanting like an elephant taking bath. So I was in Africa as a child. When I was 10, my parents traveled with us kids for 1 year around Africa. So I've seen elephants when they take bath or after they take bath. First thing they do is they take their trunk and they take some dust and they throw it all on the back. Make themselves dirty again. And that's exactly what we do if we don't parallel to the chanting. We work on giving up our false ego patterns of behaviors. Because after our chanting, we just, you know, contaminate ourselves again by falling back into these ego patterns of behaviors. And like that, we can spend many lifetimes chanting and we will not get anywhere. Because that kind of chanting is with the tenth offense. You know, we know chanting the holy name has 10 offenses. 10th offense is to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So, the material attachment is the attachment to the ego satisfaction. Showing off. And being recognized. Being in the center. That's the material attachment we are maintaining if we don't make an effort to subdue the false ego. And actually, spiritual culture is designed in such a way to dissolve exactly that, the false ego. Whereas material life and its culture, it's feeding and blowing up the ego. So that's why this topic of culture and Vaishnav culture and etiquette is so important. Because if we don't, you know, invite this in our life, then in our practical terms of life and practical patterns of behaviors, we are stuck in material ways of acting and behaving, which is always centered around feeding the ego. We will discover this in more detail. I'm just giving a little overview of why this topic is so important. And actually, in fact, this year, I want to put this topic into book form. I have managed to put two of my favorite topics and courses into book form. Actually, this one, Sheltering Relationships. Anybody attended last year the seminar we had? Yes? So that's last year's seminar in book, but more complete, you know? Yes. I just published it 2 weeks ago, just in time to have it here for the seminar. Yes. So I am humbly begging you to please get this book because it's such an important topic. The need for having a mentor, a guide. Just having guru, not enough. We need a guide on a more daily basis, a mentor who helps us to move forward, a coach. And also eventually we should become a coach ourselves to others. Otherwise our life will be superficial and external and neophyte platform. So that's that course which we had last year in book form. And the other one, Spiritual Culture, Krishna's Divine System. This is all about the important position of women. Anybody of you has that book already? I was distributing it here last year. Yes. Very, very important topic. We women play such an important role. And if this is misunderstood and neglected, whole humanity goes down to hell. And you will find the insights into that topic here. So if we ladies want to have harmonious relationships with men around us, not only in married life, but in all dealings, in management, in all dealings, we better check out this book. And also, if our men want to get the support and the empowerment from the ladies, which they actually need, the feminine energy, very powerful, it can bring the very best out of a man. Yes. So, and if the men want to get that empowerment from the ladies, you better check out this book. You will find some secrets there. And I'm not saying this because it's my book or something. No, but because I feel such a burning urgency and burning desire to get this knowledge out into the world, because we can save ourselves a lot of trouble. So anyway, next year when I come, I hope the false ego course I can show you in book form. I want to put all my courses in book form, and then that knowledge can travel so much easier. Because just this morning I spoke to somebody, and the person was saying, yeah, last year I attended your seminar, but I can't even remember what it was all about. So you better get the book, then you can check it out again and refresh the knowledge which we so easily forget in these modern days. So let us understand false ego. What exactly is that? Actually, let us remember the soul, the spirit soul, is covered by a gross body made from earth, water, fire, air, and ether. That's what you see here. And then there is a subtle body also, which is made from mind, intelligence, and here we have it, the false ego. So false ego is the most subtle element of the subtle body. And it's so subtle that we so easily completely miss it. We are not mindful, we are not conscious of it. How it is affecting us every day. Yes, my God. So, and interestingly, this subtle body of mind, intelligence, false ego, this is what brings the soul at the moment of death to the next gross body. So the same subtle body of mind, intelligence, false ego has been accompanying us for so many lifetimes already. Yes. And in the mind, there's so many deep impressions and experiences stored in there. Sometimes they come out at night in dreams and, you know. So there's so much, it's like a computer chip with so many informations there, which we have been carrying with us for many, many lifetimes. So, and thank God we forget our previous lifetimes. This is actually a real blessing, because you just imagine, you know, if you would remember who and where you were in last life and the life before and the life before, my God, this would be completely confusing and bewildering. So Krishna's divine arrangement is that we forget that. Basically, false ego means that we are imagining to be something which we are not. That's the effect of false ego. We are thinking to be something which we are actually not. So we're thinking, yes, I'm a Slovenian man or a Slovenian woman or German, or I'm a student or I'm a doctor and I'm this, I'm that. So we're imagining to be all these things, but actually we are not really that. We are actually eternal spirit soul. That's our real identity. Yes. So thank God we only have to deal with one set of designations, one set of upadis, we call this in Sanskrit. Please, everybody, switch off your phone. Yes, so thank God we only have to deal with one set of false designations and not with all the other sets from previous lifetimes, because that would be so confusing. And interestingly, false ego becomes already manifest at a very young age. So actually, just by the way, these handouts are meant for you to follow up a little bit on, because that keeps your attention span better. I personally am not a fan of PowerPoint presentations, because then everybody looks at the wall there. No, I want you to look at me here and connect with me. But, you know, the handouts, it's easier to keep attentive when you follow up a little bit, or where are we here in the topic? And you can make a few extra notes there. Right? Because even just by the process of taking notes, you learn actually, you remember more by writing things down. You know? Yes. So otherwise easily it all goes in one ear and out the other ear and you forget, you know? Yes. So false ego becomes manifest already at very young age. In fact, it already starts when the child is around 1 year. That's when it already starts manifesting. That the child wants to be in the center of attention, wants to be special and unique. I am so different. This is the effect of false ego. Thinking that we are really big and important in the center of the universe, but in actuality we are tiny, insignificant. Actually, when Srila Prabhupada was in this world, he was once saying to one of his disciples to point out how tiny and insignificant he is. He was saying, there's so many different universes. And in one of these universes, there is this one, so many planets. And amongst all these different planets, there's one planet Earth. And on this planet Earth, so many countries. And on this one planet Earth, there's one country which is called United States of America. And in this one country, there's so many different states. And there's one state called whatever. And in this one state, there's so many cities. And there's one city called New York or whatever. And in the city of New York, there's so many suburbs. And in the suburbs, there's so many buildings and houses, and there's so many living entities, so many residents running around. So, and there's one person there who is called Krishna Das. You know, just to make this point, my God, you know, when you have the bigger picture of the whole creation, we are so tiny and insignificant. Nothing. You know? Yes. But we all consider ourselves to be the center of the universe. So that's exactly the false ego giving us this wrong perception of ourselves. Right? And we imagine to be something which we are not. So, and as I was mentioning, this starts already at very young age. I remember I was once visiting one family and they had a little daughter. She was, 14, 15 months. She could just walk. She couldn't talk yet. So, and while I was talking to the parents, this girl, she was bringing all her toys into the living room. And I didn't even notice anything of it. But then the mother said, "Ah, she's trying to show off because you were there." And I thought, my God, isn't that amazing? Already at 1 year of age, you know, the false ego sets in. Oh, look at me and my toys. I'm so special. I have the best toys. And she brings them all to show off. So this tendency to show off already starts at such young age. Ego is pushing to get that satisfaction. Right? Yes. So and then, as the person grows up, you know, the layer of these false designations becomes thicker and thicker. Right? So the young girl or boy identifies, yes, I'm boy, I'm girl, I'm German, I'm Slovenian. So now I'm a pupil, I go to school, and I'm a very clever pupil. And then, yes, I'm student, I'm studying, you know, medicine, law, whatever. So now I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor. So this layer of false designations that we are identifying to be something which we are not becomes thicker and thicker, actually. And then we continue, yes, now I'm husband, I'm wife, I'm father, I'm mother. Even when we join Krishna consciousness, it continues. Now I am brahmachari, I'm a sankirtan devotee, I'm a grihastha, I'm the head pujari, I'm the temple president. And, you know, it continues. The layers of false designations is becoming thicker and thicker as we are going through life. We are imagining to be so many things which we are not. Actually, what we really are is Jiva Swarupa Krishna Nityadas. We are eternal servant of the Lord. That's our real identification. But that is covered. It's buried under a whole thick layer of designations. And of course, these designations, they are temporary roles we may be playing, right? We may be playing the role of being father, mother, husband, wife, you know, pujari, sankirtan devotee, department head. So they are all roles we may be playing, like we are wearing different hats. But we are not that hat. We are wearing it at certain times. Right? But the problem is we are identifying with these worlds. We are identifying with these hats. We think that's me. Right? So why do we identify with them? Maybe one of you can give me the answer. Why do we identify with these roles? Huh? What's the answer? Just to make sure you're with me here, not just sleeping away there.
Hmm? This is our reality in this situation.
Sorry? This is our reality in this situation. Yes, this is our reality in this situation, and more reasons why do we identify? Jiva Swarupa Krishna Nityadas. You know, that's what we should be identifying. So why do we identify with these roles? Exactly. Very true. Exactly. Because they give us some subtle sense gratification and we become attached to them. Exactly. That's what that takes place. We become attached to that subtle gratification which comes along with them. Right? Yes. Let me first present a few things and then I will open up for comments and questions. Yes. So let's imagine, yeah, we are the Sankirtan leader or something. So there is some certain recognition and gratification coming along, and that gives us some pleasure. It satisfies the false ego. Yes, it gives some gratification for the false ego, and that's why we become attached to it. And then we hang on to that. Right? Yes. Yes. That's what's going on, even in our spiritual life. Right? I mean, we can give an example. Let's say, and I'm not hinting at anybody here in the temple, definitely not. But let's say, you know, a devotee is the temple president, and then one day, you know, he's asked to give up the position and let somebody else be the temple president. So if he's not attached, if he simply wants to serve and nothing else, then this is not a big deal. You know, then he will say, okay, fine, all I want to do is serve. And I thought I can serve the devotees nicely by being the temple president, but if you have some different idea and you want me to do some other service, fine with me, all I want to do is serve. So please you tell me, how can I serve? And then such a change of position will not be any big thing, you know. But we have to be a little honest, you know, that I have seen that this is sometimes a big, my God, it's a whole big drama and conflict situation if one person is removed from a position, you know, that, oh, he doesn't want to let go, or she. And then all the politics and fighting is happening and, you know, so why are these things coming along? Because we attached, you know, yes. Because we are hanging on to these titles and positions because they're giving us some gratification. Yes. Or different example from our practical life, and again, I'm not hinting at our Brahmacharis here or anything, but let's be honest, you know, the position of Brahmachari or even Brahmacharini, unmarried, renounced, nun, disciple, you know, there is some certain gratification there. There is some certain honor and recognition coming along, just the saffron cloth. So sometimes it's like that people just, you know, don't want to recognize that actually it's time to move on to the next ashram or something, but no, they're hanging on to the saffron cloth until the very last day, and or they realize only when they're 48 or 50 that actually they're not properly situated, and so this is all because of this attachment to these temporary designations. We are identifying with us, and they become so dear to us, that kind of hat. Yes. So, and then sooner or later there's always some trouble coming along, troublemaker. You know, this false ego is the troublemaker. So let us do a quick personal exercise. You know, we presented that these different roles are like hats we are wearing. They're temporary roles, and we identify with them. So let me ask you to turn to your neighbor and share which hat is your favorite one, which gives you a lot of, you know, satisfaction and sense enjoyment in a subtle or gross way. Which hat is very dear to you and you're hanging on to that? Just to become a little more conscious of how this false ego affects us. So you please turn to your neighbor and share just 2 minutes privately, quickly. Which false designation, which hat are you most attached to? Okay, go permanently. I remember, you know, in one of the European countries here, I don't want to, mention any names or anything, but I know one lady there. She was for about 18 years in the temple, living in the temple as Brahmacharini. 18 years. And she had so, you know, identified with this position of being a renounced devotee woman, not being married. And it was so hard for her to actually understand and accept that, yeah, she was not properly situated. And actually, she had so many health problems because she was emotionally not satisfied. We women, we have more emotional needs, and very easily when we are not situated in family life, we become emotionally very dry, and very easily that manifests then in health problems. So this was all going on in her life. You know, that she, because she rejected, she was so adverse to this idea of getting married. But actually her nature was to be married, and she was fighting it because she was attached to this designation of being the renounced senior brahmana in the temple there. And it was such a tough journey for her to come to terms with that she should be getting married. It took her several years and a whole internal work and all. What will everybody think? You know, as soon as these thoughts come into our mind, what will everybody think if I get married now? You know, this is a classic scenario of the false ego, you know, that we are so concerned about our image and what will everybody think, you know. So it's not only for brahmacharis, but it can also be for the ladies, you know, if we are so attached to a certain situation and position and that subtle gratification that comes along with that, and to give that up can be really tough, you know, even within Krishna consciousness. And I remember also another example. I was once speaking to a senior devotee, and he had a very high position, and yeah, the indications came that, you know, he should be actually better giving up the position and letting somebody else take on and bring things further, you know. But also, again, so tough for him to give up. And at some stage, I was saying to him, well, you know, there is life beyond being a whatever, temple president, GBC, whatever it may be. There is life beyond that. You know? And then he was saying, but what am I then if I'm not in that position? What will I be then? Who am I then? And I was really surprised. Wow, my God, you know, that's how we identify with these positions. And I just said to him, well, we are just a devotee, a Vaishnava, servant of the servant. That's what we are. But no, he couldn't accept. But okay, but what else? You know? So that's how we identify with these titles and positions. And we almost can fall into some identity crisis at the thought of having to let go of them. Huh? Yes. So my God, you know, so obviously We have to become more conscious here, you know. This is the false ego at its work. Yeah. And then we will definitely suffer and face so many obstacles and troubles. Yeah. Apart from the fact that with false ego, we cannot get out of this material world. If we want to go back home, back to Godhead, subtle body of mind, intelligence, false ego has to be completely transformed and spiritualized. And as long as there's still some material aspects of the false ego there, subtle body will force us to take another birth. Guaranteed. So if we want to get out of here, we have to work on this false ego and dissolve it and spiritualize it and transform it into the real ego, which is our eternal position. Jiva Swarupa Vaikrishna Nityadas. I'm servant. That's the real identification. So we can't avoid doing that work somehow. And Prabhupada, in one purport in the Bhagavatam, he gives this nice analogy saying that life in the material world is just like a nonsensical stage performance. We still got some printed materials, Mataji, for him? Did he get some materials? Everybody who comes in late should be given the materials. Everybody has the materials? Yes, good. Okay. So Prabhupada is comparing life in the material world to a nonsensical stage performance. And I really like this comparison. It's fantastic because that's exactly what it is. Every lifetime is like a performance on the stage. And we are playing a role. All right, this lifetime, I am Slovenian man, I am German woman, and we really identify with it, we take it in, we take it as being so important. Oh, we are so busy, we have so many things to do, we are running around like mad, I am so busy. And then death comes, curtain closes, all finished. You're not Slovenian man or German woman anymore. It's all gone, finished. Then soul goes in the next existence. We have a new body. Curtain opens again. So, and then the next nonsensical stage performance happens. You know, then we are some man in Africa or whatever it may be. And again, we take it all in. We take it so seriously. We're running around. Oh, I'm so busy. I have so many important things to do. And we take it all as the reality here. And then again, curtain closes. Then next life, we are dog in Sweden. Oh, and we are barking away. Whoa, 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 whoa. We're taking it really seriously. Oh, I'm so important. I have to protect this property and bark and. Yeah, dog also has a subtle body of a dog's mind, a dog's intelligence, dog's false ego. He identifies with being a dog and he's taking it really seriously. So, this is what it's like, you know, lifetime after lifetime, nonsensical stage performance through the false ego. You know, we are thinking ourselves to be something which we are not. And like that it goes on and on and on and on and on. One crazy circus after another. So, and obviously, you know, if we are identifying or we are thinking ourselves to be something which we are not, this actually brings a lot of anxiety along. Let us imagine we are the servant at a king's court. Right? So, and then one day we are announcing, so I am the king now. Well, that would bring a lot of anxiety along, right? Because we would be in anxiety. Oh, how can I really make everybody believe that I am the king? And how about if they find out that I'm actually not the king? And so, you know, having to project, you know, something which we are not, that brings a lot of anxiety along. Because we're trying to be something which we are actually not. Must be a very stressful condition. And that's exactly what we're experiencing in the material world. That's why, you know, life in this world is full of anxieties and stress, because we're always trying to be something which we are not. We're trying to convince everybody of something which we are not. So it has to be such a troublesome position. And that's why, you know, when we actually join Krishna consciousness, maybe some of you remember this. I definitely remember when I first met the devotees. Oh, it was such a relief. Oh, finally, I don't have to pretend anymore to be something which I'm not. All I have to do is be a humble servant and just, you know, try my best to serve. Oh, thank God, you know. I don't have to pretend to be some really fantastic person there. You know, but all I have to do is just actually serve. So this actually brings a lot of, peace and relief, actually. But then very often, initially that relief is there, but then as we are practicing Krishna consciousness, we again accept so many upadis, and then the anxieties start again. But in any case, the more we become purified, the more we dissolve and subdue the false ego, the more peaceful and relieved we become, actually. That's a sign of Krishna consciousness, you know, that we are making progress, that we actually get rid of all these mundane anxieties and troubles like that. Yes, so let me quickly see if until now, let me establish one thing. When we ask questions, my humble request is that we only ask questions about what we discussed, because there will be so many more things coming. Tomorrow morning, 8 to 9, we have one, one session. Tomorrow evening, 5 to 7, another session. So, and the seminar is very systematically building up. So there will be so many things coming. So when we discuss, when we ask questions, let us just discuss and ask about the topics we discussed. Otherwise, my answer will be, yes, tomorrow morning we talk about that, and yes, tomorrow evening we talk about that. And oh, yeah, that will be on Sunday morning. And it will also help me to keep the discussion on track and not get sidetracked into different topics or something. So let me see. Do we have until now? There is some more things to come for today's session. But until now, do we have any comments or doubts or questions or anything? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, microphone. Good.
How can you find out if the identification with being a devotee is based on false ego or real ego?
How can you find out if you identify with a temporary position within Krishna consciousness or with being eternal servant? How you find out? Yeah, that's the question. Well, it definitely manifests in our ability whether we can cooperate. That's where it manifests practically, where it becomes exposed. You know? as I mentioned these examples, you know, we have a position and then we are asked to step down and let somebody else do it. So, well, at the latest there, we have to show true color. As I was mentioning, if we are simply humble servant, then this will not be an issue. You know? But if we attach to the title and position, it will be an issue. It will be a whole drama. In fact, and again, I mean, I'm not saying this to criticize anybody, but, you know, just to, you know, I'm actually coming from medical background, so my mood is always, let's make the diagnose here. And I've been in Krishna consciousness, trying to practice Krishna consciousness for 35 years in so many different parts of the world. So in 35 years, you see quite a few things and you observe, you know, especially if you're a little alert and observant. And I only know one person, one devotee, who was temple president and who handed over the post to somebody else and who is still practicing in that same community. For most temple presidents, it's impossible to still be part of the same community without having that title. That's the sad reality. Right? You get my point? Yes. Then it's so painful for the ego that they have to leave. They have to go somewhere else, to another community, to another country or something. The ego cannot tolerate that now somebody else is the temple president. Yeah, so obviously, you know, there's something, we are missing something in our spiritual practice. But it also shows in other situations, you know, we don't have to wait until we are temple president in order to see whether we are actually humble servant or we attach to the position. Let's imagine, you know, we want to do something, or let's imagine we are asked to sing a kirtan or something, and then somebody else comes, a visiting preacher comes, and then he leads the kirtan. So if we get all offended and, oh, you know, it's my turn, I was asked, you know, so obviously, you know, if we are humble servant, then there's no problem. All right, whether I lead the kirtan or I sing along, it's all service. Whether I give the lecture or I hear, it's all service. You know, but I mean, actually in due course of the seminar, we will get more into practical details, how things manifest and Vaishnav etiquette, how we are meant to behave in order to help us to dissolve the ego. And then it will become even more clear, you know, that yes, being offended is always a sign of false ego and so many other things. I won't tell them now because they're coming over the next few days. But if you come every session, I can guarantee you, you get a pretty clear idea. And you will be able to assess yourself also, you know, realizing, okay, that's me, that's what I'm always doing, you know. And another point which connects very nicely to this book, we do need a mentor. This is a whole big issue, you know, that as long as we have material desires and attachments, we can't objectively assess ourselves because our vision of ourselves is foggy, it's clouded. And we need this more experienced, confidential, trusting friend who can help us who can help us by pointing out, hey, just relax, you know, don't act like this, And here is your thing you have to work on. And. I mean, even out there in the material world, people know. If you want to become a successful sportsman or successful businessman, you need a coach who is already more successful. And he can guide you to success. Anybody out there knows this. Right? So what to speak of devotional life? Of course. Even more so, we need a coach. We need a mentor. Having a Diksha Guru, not enough. Not enough. How often do we see our gurus? Once or twice a year. They have thousands of disciples. They cannot possibly know each and every disciple's practical situation in their life. They're not even here to see how we are practicing, how is our sadhana, how is our service mood, how is our cooperation. You know, they cannot see. You know? Yes. So we need somebody who can observe us and who has this only interest in helping us in our spiritual development. Because interestingly, the bigger the false ego is, the less we can realize, the less we can see it. We may think it should be the other way round. The bigger the ego is, the more we will see it. But no! The bigger it is, the less we can see it. Because the ego has this effect of blocking the ears and blocking the intelligence. We can't hear, we can't understand. That's what the ego does. And to illustrate this, I want to share one amusing story in Germany. There is one pretty senior lady, you know, she's been around for 25 or 28 years, doing a lot of service, working very hard, but my God, such a big, heavy ego, always dominating, arguing, you know, getting herself into trouble, creating conflicts, and she's been living in the temple, and every temple is asking her, or maybe you can move to the next temple, you know, and so on. So, and she was a little depressed and upset, and she was kind of turning a little bit towards me, and I thought, all right, let me make friends with her, and maybe I can help her to actually recognize her problem. So, and then at some point, I was very carefully indicating, I was saying to her, well, you know, this false ego is always getting us into trouble. This is what I was saying. And you know what she said? She was laughing. She was laughing and saying, false ego? Come on, what's that? I don't have that. That's what she was saying. She was laughing. Come on, false ego, what's that? I don't have that. And I was so shocked. I thought, how is it possible? You know, if somebody has such a heavy, strong ego, and they say, I don't have that. I mean, I was so in shock. I thought, my God, how is it possible? How is it possible? And first, I didn't say anything, but then the only answer I could think of is, I said to her, I wish I could say that. That's all I said. I wish I could say that I don't have a false ego. And it's really like that. The bigger the false ego is, the less you realize, the less you understand. You cannot see, you cannot hear. That's really the effect of the ego. And I know from my own spiritual practice, you know, in the first few years, I also could not hear, could not understand how my ego was pushing me to say things which I shouldn't say and to do things which I shouldn't do. And as we become purified, then we become more sensitive to subtleties. And then we can recognize. Yes. So it actually requires some little purification to be introspective and sensitized enough to actually notice, to perceive the false ego. While we are so heavily covered, we cannot even distinguish at all. We cannot notice, you know. But then by following the etiquettes and at the same time chanting the holy name, that ultimately will gradually purify us. Vaishnava etiquette and culture is our saving grace. Without that, no hope, no chance, no chance. We will discover. So in any case, that's how the ego works. The bigger it is, the less we can notice, you know. And we do need some well-wishing friend who has no other interest except helping us in our spiritual journey here, and who can point out, like I was trying with that lady, you know, giving her a little hint, but she couldn't even see and hear, you know. Yes. Any other? Yes, sure.
You said that we identify with certain roles, like temporary roles, because they give us sense gratification. But what, for example, with rape victims? They also identify with this, like, role, temporary role, even though
Rape victims?
For example, but some roles...
With negative.
Which doesn't give you sense gratification, but still we identify with them.
Same thing. Yes. It is also an effect of this bodily identification, of thinking, I am woman, and thinking, oh, I'm a victim. And then the ego hangs on to that. You know? We will get to this also later, you know? Ego wants justice and fairness and all this. This is also an effect of the false ego. We will understand more. But yeah, it is related to a temporary designation, temporary situation. You know, whether it's in the good or in the bad, traumatic experience or some sense gratification, the ego hangs on to it and carries it, and it affects the mind. I mean, also these three aspects of the subtle body, mind, intelligence, false ego, they affect each other. You know, I mean, it's very interesting. It gives so much insights into psychology. Bhagavad Gita, it's all about psychology, actually. How the false ego affects the intelligence and how it affects the mind and. It all works back and forwards there, you know.
But why does ego keep such identification which doesn't provide him with sense gratification, with pleasure, if they only provide pain? Why does he still identify with it?
Well, because of that identification. Because of that. It's hanging on to it. It's the same thing when we get offended. But that's a topic later. You have to come again and then you will... I don't want to get into that now, you know, but it's in the topic of being offended, that this is also an effect of the false ego. Yes. Because we are identifying, and I shouldn't be treated like this, and all this is not fair, and. So again, the ego hangs on to that, you know, wanting justice or, you know, hanging on to traumatic experiences there and so on, you know. Yes. Any other comment, question so far? Yes, for can I have a bit more water?
Hare Krishna. So you mentioned we are living in the world of opinion.
Of?
Opinion.
And a world of opinions?
Yes.
Okay.
So, what is this? I have my opinion. Huh? Always. I am right. I have my opinion. This is present everywhere and is much very much important for us, for everyone. This is my opinion. I have my opinion. Because that is supposed we have so much troubles.
Okay, well, we may have different opinions. That in itself is not bad, because we are all individual souls and we are individual personalities. So there is room for different moods and flavors and tastes and viewpoints. I mean, even in the spiritual world, there is so many different moods and flavors and tastes and viewpoints and opinions. That in itself is not bad. But when the trouble starts is when this individuality is combined with a false ego, that my opinion is better and everybody should have my opinion, you know, then the trouble starts. And that's again the false ego, that, you know, false ego makes us think, I am right, I know better, my idea is the best. That's the effect of false ego. Thank you. In fact, as a practical example, I know two Maharajas, I don't want to mention their names, but they have such different mood of developing communities. So different, you can't even imagine. It can't be more different than that. Completely different approaches and moods. But they are the best of friends. They're very close. They spend a lot of time together. They relish each other's association. But their moods and approaches is completely different. So this is only possible if those two personalities are not on the false ego platform. Then they can be the best of friends. Because none of them wants to convince the other that my idea is better, my approach works better. No. They simply respect each other in their difference being different. And you know, they transcend that and they can be best of friends just on, you know, on their dedication to serving Prabhupada, on chanting the holy name, and. So having different opinions in itself is no harm. That's not the problem. The problem is that when we think everybody should have my idea and my opinion and I know better. So, and that's where the ego sets in. And then we have all the conflicts and politics and this and that happening. Huh? Yes. Let us continue a little bit more. In 1858, Bhagavad Gita 1858, you've got the number on your sheet but not the translation, Krishna gives us some nice insight into this topic of false ego. He says, if you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. Very nice. So, what's happening here? Krishna is basically giving us two choices. How we can act in life. Either we act under him, becoming conscious of him, accepting our position of being humble servant. That's our true position. Then Krishna will help us to overcome all obstacles of conditioned life if we just work that way. But if we don't want to work that way and we work under false ego motivation, I'm the doer, I can do it, I'm this, I'm that, and. So, if we don't work in such consciousness of Krishna being the Supreme, but act towards ego, not hearing Krishna, because that's the effect of the ego, we can't hear, we can't understand, so then we will be lost. So basically, these are the two motivating forces in life. You know, like my German bank on the internet side, they have this motto, everyone has something, we all have something which keeps us going. We all have something which keeps us going. So we all have some motivating force. So there's two choices. One motivating force is, I want to serve and please Krishna and his devotees. Then we will not be affected by the threefold miseries of material life. But the more common motivating force is, of course, a different one, twofold ego. I want to become this, I want to do that. I'm mother, father, and I'm a big boss here, whatever it may be, you know. So then that's the motivating force of false ego. And sooner or later, it will always backfire. It will always get us into trouble. It's a very practical thing. You know, we can look in our own life. And once we understand a little bit more how subtle the false ego is, we can actually detect that whenever we were getting ourselves into some troublesome situation, there was always some wrong motivation there. In a subtle way, there was some ego motivation there. And then, boom, you know, we will be lost. We get ourselves into trouble. I mean, when I look back in my life, I can clearly see this. Whenever I was caught in some, you know, unpleasant situation, if I look back, I can see, yep, false ego was pushing me to do things, to say things which I shouldn't do, shouldn't say, and then boom, I was, you know, receiving some reactions for this. And sometimes it's so subtle, and definitely at that moment we can't even recognize it usually. But then later on, when we look back, then we can see, okay, yes, here we are, you know, the ego was pushing me in some way, and that's why I couldn't do what I wanted to do, or I got into trouble, or whatever, you know. Yeah, so the ego thing, it's a very strong motivating force, actually. Much stronger, usually, as the motivation of pleasing Krishna and serving the devotees, unfortunately. You know, the ego is a much stronger motivating force. Yes. Yes. So, actually, we can really say false ego is really the main and foremost enemy. Even though Shastra Srimad Bhagavatam says the uncontrolled mind is the worst enemy. But uncontrolled mind, false ego, oh, we can hardly even distinguish them. They're so, you know, they affect each other backwards and forwards. So, false ego is really what keeps us entangled in this material world, which gets us always into trouble, which makes us think to be something that we are not. And false ego is almost, it's almost like a separate entity whispering always into our ears. You know better, you are great, you are it. You plan is the best, and it's constantly going. False ego is constantly pushing us to get that gratification of, yes, I'm the one, you know, yes. It's going on continuously, practically, continuously. And we usually we don't even realize. Even when we chant japa, very often what we think is the uncontrolled mind, you know, taking us for a ride there and distracting us. But if we look a little deeper, it's actually the false ego. The ego is what pushes the mind. The ego is what, you know, what carries on and on. You know, I'm sure we all have this experience that sometimes, you know, in our minds, there's all these discussions going on. Oh, I should have said this, and he should have said that, and this and that, and actually I was right, and, right? Do we have this experience? Yes? Or is it only me who has it? Yes. So, this is not so much the mind, it's actually the false ego. The false ego wants that gratification. Yes. Yes. So that's why Mahaprabhu says, Sinada Pisunichana, you know, one can chant the holy name only in a humble state of mind. Yes, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. Only then we can actually chant. But as long as we're proud and full of ego, desires there and ego patterns of behaviors, then the ego is always torturing us. It's actually torturing us. It's tormenting us. Half the time we don't even recognize that it's the ego. We might just think, oh, why am I so depressed? Or why am I like this? Why am I not happy? We are not even perceptive enough to understand, oh, it's just the ego harassing us and pushing us and torturing us and giving us all kinds of crazy ideas and, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's almost a daily battle we are facing, you know, where the ego is always, pushing and torturing us. And it's really the main cause for conflicts, for anxieties, all these inner battles and tortures. And it's the ego. It's the ego, you know. Like, even who of you is married here? Let me ask. Anybody married? Not so many. Married life is the battlefield of false egos. Oh, my God. One can wait. I mean, I was married for 10 years, so I'm speaking from personal experience. Married life, one can waste so much time, so much energy, just with ego battles. Right? Isn't it? Whoever's married here, right? You agree with that? Who is right? Who is wrong? Just see, I told you so. Why didn't you do it like I told you? And. You know? Or these petty arguments people are having. Mainly in married life, you know, because there you have to cooperate, you know? So, all these petty arguments, often people wonder, why am I arguing about such dumb things? You know, some little details becomes a whole big argument in family life. Oh, what is the reason? Yeah, false ego. You know? Yes. And sometimes people are wondering, God, how is it possible that such a stupid little detail creates such a monster there and such conflicts? It's the ego. You know, the ego is pushing us to be right, to be better, to be superior. We're trying to establish our superior position and in so many different ways. And, you know, and then the egos are clashing and rubbing. And actually, that's why married life is so purifying. Because it teaches us, you know, in a practical way, it teaches us to let go and subdue the false ego. It's a whole purifying journey, this married life, really. Yes. Perfect opportunity, you know, because in cooperation, that's where we practically have to give in and let go and take the humble position and let him be right, even if he's not, and adjust, and, you know. So, especially when we live together in a close proximity with a person and we have to cooperate, that's so purifying for the ego. Highly purifying. Highly purifying. Actually, one thing is, for those spirit souls in male bodies, they have three purifying duties. Let me see if our men know this. What are the three purifying duties for those spirit souls driving a male body? What are the main purifying duties? Don't understand my question? What are the main three duties of a man? Come on. No, just as a man, especially in family life, but also in general as a man, what are your three main duties as a man? What is a man meant to do? To protect, provide, and one more. Comes later. Protect, provide, and? Yes, to take charge. Let's call it take charge, because to lead, people might say, oh, well, some men are not leaders per se. But no, to take charge. That's the duties a man is meant to play, to protect, to provide, and to take charge, according to Krishna's system and Krishna's recommendation. Here you will read more about this topic. So, and that's why man's body always comes along with a bigger false ego. Sorry to say. That's the way it is. It's Krishna's perfect arrangement just to make sure he wants to take charge. Yes. Because if he wouldn't have the bigger ego, then he probably wouldn't want to play the role of taking charge. But somebody has to play the role. Somebody has to take charge. So that's why the male body comes always along with a stronger ego. That pushes him, that motivates him to take charge. As we were saying, the ego motivation is a stronger motivating force. Right? So, and the real challenge is for a man to play that role in within Krishna consciousness as humble servant. That's a challenge. That's not easy. Because as soon as you want to take charge, the ego comes with it. The ego wants to be part of it. Right? So to take charge and lead without ego motivation, as humble servant, that's a real challenge. That's not easy. Yes. And what is the purifying path for the man to subdue their false egos in a practical sense, apart from chanting Hare Krishna and following Vaishnava etiquette? What's the... Now you can come. You remember from last time, do you? Yes. Let me see if any of the men know. How are the men in a practical way subduing and giving up their false egos? Understanding that they have a bigger ego so that they want to take charge. So how do they subdue that false ego? Any idea of the man? Yeah, you're pretty close. Cooperate. You know, tolerance and compromise means to cooperate. Right? Yes. Very clear, because to cooperate with other men. Because if you have many men in one spot there, and they all have stronger egos. They all want to lead and take charge. So you're going to have some clashes there, obviously, right? So, and for the man, the purifying path is to cooperate with other men. And that's not easy, you know. We see in practical life so much power battles and ego battles and power games are going on amongst the men, you know. Yes, yes. So, and for the women, actually, their main motivator, what are the three duties for the women? Who remembers? I think I mentioned this maybe last time or something, or whoever read the book. This is our topics of the book. What are the three purifying duties of the women? Well, first of all, before we can raise them, we have to have them. Yes, we give birth. Somebody has to do that. So that's the women's roles and duties, to give birth and to be the caregiver, the raising the children. And what's the third one? Very true, yes. To be the power of inspiration to the men. We women are meant to be the power of inspiration, the auspicious source of energy. Prabhupada says it in the Bhagavatam. Yes. Women are very powerful in being the inspiration. So, and just to make sure we play the role of being mother, giving birth, and raising the child, also false ego is pushing us. In a sense that we are given a higher emotional nature and emotional needs. Identifying with woman, you know? And yes, that pushes us and inspires us to be mother. Otherwise, how, you know, which woman would want to bear children? It's so much headache, pregnancy, giving birth, oh my God, so much tapasya. Which woman would want to play that role? If it wasn't for the emotional nature motivating us, which is also connected with the false ego. You see? So it's nice examples to illustrate how Krishna gives the right qualities with the bodies, with the vehicles, and the false ego is motivating us to play the roles we are meant to play. Because somebody has to protect and provide and take charge. Somebody has to give birth to the children and raise them and be caring and be the power of inspiration to the man. So it fits perfectly together, you know. And the ego is motivating us. But then when we play these roles within Krishna consciousness, then gradually, you know, we should come to the point where we play these roles as humble servant, not on the ego motivating force. So, and what's the purifying path for the women to dissolve the ego? You remember? Yeah. Huh? Maybe. Let me see if anybody else remembers. What's the purifying path for the women? For the men, we said cooperating with the other men. For the women? Huh? Yes, yeah, you're in the right path. Well, let's put it in general. We women, we give up our false ego by taking the subordinate position towards men. That's the way how we give up our false ego, especially in married life. But even if we are not married, you know, even as a preacher myself, so many times I come into situations where I, you know, have to smile to myself, just say, even as a, you know, woman in a renounced phase of life, if we want to have harmonious relationships with men, we better take the humble position, you know. And that's how we dissolve the false ego, by taking the humble position towards men. In all dealings. In all dealings. That's how we dissolve the false ego. Let him be right, even if he's wrong. Doesn't matter. Yes. This whole thing of, oh, I'm right, I know better. It's all false ego stuff, my God. It's all false ego. False ego is pushing to get that gratification of being right and knowing better and being superior. It's all ego stuff. Yes. Yeah, so especially in married life. And I have noticed, not wanting to upset anybody or something, but I have practically noticed that if a woman has never been married, as a rule, there is a big false ego. And it's very clear because, you know, if we are alone all our life, we don't have that daily exercise, that opportunity on a daily basis to take the subordinate and humble position. We don't have that. And then the ego becomes very prominent. That's one main reason why it is so advisable for ladies to be married, even if it's just 10 years like I was married. Still, I would not want to miss that purifying journey there, you know, apart from the fact that my married life was very interesting and adventurous and so on. And I learned so many other things also. But, yeah, just for that, it's highly recommendable. Yes, because we have to adjust. We have to take the humble position. Otherwise, we will have war in our marriage. You know? Yes. 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 I once heard one spiritual master, Chaitanya Chandrachuran Prabhu. Anybody knows him here? Russian guru. Yes. He once said in a lecture in Mayapur, he was saying, 30 years of Grihastha Ashram and you will be a pure devotee. Yes, and I mean, it's not even easy to find people who have been married for 30 years, who kept their marriages together for 30 years. Not so easy to find, so it just shows how difficult it is to become a pure devotee, you know. Yes, yes. Tolerance. We will get to that another time tomorrow or the day after. Tolerance, such an important quality, you know. And tolerance means ego is subdued, you know. Because it's the ego which rebels and can't tolerate. It's a false ego. Yes. Yeah, so let's conclude the today's session. To actually go back home, back to Godhead, we do have to dissolve the false ego. We can't avoid it. There's no way around it. We have to do that internal work. And as Prabhupada was always saying, in order to become Krishna conscious, we first have to become conscious first. So this whole topic of false ego, we first have to become conscious how the ego affects us, how it is always getting into our way, how it is our constant companion and troublemaker, and. Otherwise, if we are dull in that regards and we are not even mindful and perceptive, then, oh, we have no chance, you know, no chance to actually do some deeper work there. We always fall back into our ego patterns of behaviors, trying to be right, and, you know. So, this is kind of the humble attempt that this whole seminar is meant to give us, that we first of all become conscious, but then also over the next few days we will discuss very practical tools, what we have to do and what kind of rules of etiquette we have to follow in order to really embrace the whole process properly of Krishna consciousness and actually get somewhere and not just, you know, be stagnant there and run on the spot there and not going anywhere, you know. Like you probably know this analogy of the hamster wheel, right? hamster, this little animal, you know, is very active at night, and people put this hamster wheel in the cage, and the hamster runs there at night, running. You hear the noise of the wheel going, you know. So, but hamster is not going anywhere. You know, he's just running, but he's not going anywhere. So very easily we can become like that in our spiritual practice. We're keeping ourselves so busy and running, but we're not moving forward. You know, we're maintaining the same subtle or gross attachments, same patterns of behavior. We're not moving anywhere. So we don't want to spend our spiritual practice like that, you know. No, we don't. So over the next few days, we will discuss very systematically all kinds of tools and things which give us a lot of stuff to actually do some internal work. Yes. Okay, let me see. Is there any last, final question, comment, doubt? Okay, so let us do our last little personal exercise. Please turn to your neighbor and share what this session gave you. What are you taking out of here for today's session? What's the realization of this evening? Hopefully something. Hopefully I didn't waste my time here. So just by sharing with a neighbor, you know, that helps us to reflect more. Or what am I taking out here? What's the realization of this evening? So just quickly get together in pairs there, just for 2 minutes. Share something. Okay, Guru Premanandi, Hari Hari Om. Okay, so we'll finish for today. If you really want to get the most out of this seminar, then please come to each session because it is so systematically building up. So tomorrow we have a short session in the morning from 8 to 9. So if you have time, please come for that, because tomorrow we already getting into practical things there and etiquette and. So it would be a shame if you missed the tomorrow morning session. But then tomorrow evening, again from 5 to 7, we continue. And it will be in the classroom there upstairs, because here in the temple room will be another program, the Kirtan program, right? And if anybody of you wants to get a book, they are a donation of €9 each. And if you don't have money now or something, I will have them every time here, you know. So I highly recommend. Actually, this one is also very much related to the topic of false ego, because spiritual life is all about subduing the false ego. Materialistic life is all about blowing it up to the max. You know, so it's all connected with the topic of culture, you know. So there's a lot of stuff about the ego thing and so on, you know. Okay, and if anybody is interested in taking a little brochure on my little humble little institute, you're welcome to do that too. Okay, thank you so much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavida Bhaktivinoda ki, Guru Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol.